Patrick, what do you think about our show?
Our show is acceptable. Almost as good as Google Keep.
Justin?
It's okay, but you need some more fanfare in front of your other news section.
It's called Other Business.
Yeah.
You're off the show. Hello and welcome to What's the Deal, the Seinfeld review show that's 80% cashmere. Each week we dissect every episode of Seinfeld in chronological order. With me today is your favorite guest host, Justin Armstrong.
Hello.
And Patrick Armstrong.
Hello.
I'm Cameron Wong and this is episode 29. Today we will be looking at season 3, episode 12, The Red Dot. That's right, episode 29. That's almost 30.
What comes after 30?
40.
Okay.
So, Justin, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me again. I'm surprised you fired Chris permanently from the show. That's a bold move to make, but I think it was the right move ultimately.
He was a renegade.
I'm like a fine opium. Once you take a taste.
Just a taste.
So how are you today?
I'm pretty good, I guess.
Tell me about it.
Just pretty good, Cameron. Just pretty good.
I saw you had a lot of eggs for dinner tonight. What'd you have for dinner?
I had some eggs on a couple fine whole wheat English muffins. They were pretty delicious.
How many eggs?
4 eggs, Patrick. 32 grams of protein.
And how many grams of protein in the English muffins?
6 grams, Cameron.
Okay. And then mayonnaise, that's got egg in it. So how much protein from the mayonnaise?
I don't actually know. I should look at that. Yeah.
You should.
I probably know more than 1 or 2 grams at best.
Well, about a cup of mayonnaise has 1 egg in it.
Huh.
So
maybe like 1 gram tops, maybe 2.
So what inspired you to create this meal? What's the story behind this?
No story. Just fun to eat. I like it.
Why do you need all that protein?
Why do you know down to the gram how many grams of protein there are in an egg?
You know, when you're cutting, when you're reducing body fat and trying to maintain muscle mass, protein intake is very important, Cameron.
Cutting season, getting ready for the beach.
Yeah, the spring beach.
So are you the meathead of this show? Are you the bodybuilding jock of What's the Deal?
Come here, let me give you a wedgie, Cameron. Just lean over.
It was atomic! Patrick, how are you today?
Good. Had some Chinese food for dinner. It was pretty good. From Mi Wah.
I like it there.
Yeah, it was good. Had some Fu Yang.
Love the Fu Yang.
Had some...
A lot of egg in Fu Yang.
Mm-hmm.
How many grams of protein you got in that?
Had some 4 vegetable stir fry. It's pretty good.
All right. Any other news from this week?
From this week? No, not really. Went to a show last night, Born Ruffians. It was good.
It was a good show. I was there as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're from Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Also in Canada.
Mm.
Home of Chris Scott, where he's not right now. For the record, for listeners who are actually concerned, Chris has not quit the show. He's still working on his movie and was not able to be with us this week.
He'll be back.
He'll be back.
Or he'll be dead.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
How are you doing, Cameron?
I'm doing well.
What's new with you?
I'm just taking care of business.
TCB?
That's right. I bought this game called Hotline Miami today. No, wait, yesterday.
In it, do you run a phone line for Miami residents?
No, it's an alternate 1980s, and you play as a man who gets phone calls directing him to go and commit acts of violence, and then you go and commit the acts of violence.
Sounds kind of awful.
No, it's fun. It's, it is awful in respect that it's extremely violent, but... It's pretty fun. Good good game. I don't know what to say. It's now available for OS X through Steam. costs $10.
What kind of acts of violence? Like breaking someone's kneecaps? Breaking their fingers?
Oh, well, you go to like a place and you just have to kill everyone who's inside.
Hmm.
And so let's say you don't have any guns. Maybe after you punch him on the ground, you have to smash his head on the ground till it blows up like a watermelon.
Okay.
It's it's fun for the whole family. It's a lot like Majora's Mask. It's actually nothing like Majora's Mask.
Okay.
Hey, you know, I don't want to take too much thunder here, but Chris announced it. But in his movie, the smoking man from the X-Files.
That's pretty exciting.
He's in it?
He's in it.
Wow.
Did you not know this, Justin?
I knew it, but I was just playing along.
Yeah, do you think he has just stuck around Vancouver?
He lives in Toronto, doesn't he? I read that on Wikipedia, actually.
Oh, so he flew out to Vancouver for Chris's movie?
I don't know.
He must be in Vancouver, because otherwise Chris would have to pay for the flight.
Yeah.
But I read on Wikipedia that the Smoking Man is based in Toronto. So maybe
he was there for another movie or TV show or something, and they just happened to get him.
Hmm.
I don't know. Maybe Chris can clear this up when he comes back. He can tell us about getting the Smoking Man. That'll be exciting.
No.
Okay.
Okay, Smoking Man's real name, does anyone know offhand?
William B. Davis.
That's a good name.
Yeah. It's that B in there.
Patrick B. Armstrong.
Bill B. Davis. That's not that good.
That was my joke from like a week ago. And you just stole it on our show.
Billy B. Davis.
Billy D. Williams.
Oh, right. What?
It's Lando.
Oh, yeah. Should have gotten him instead of the Smoking Man.
Should have gotten him instead of you.
You know, you know, there's a little known fact about William B. Davis. He actually got the B as promotion for B Movie when that movie was coming out. They added it to his name.
No, they didn't.
That's very relevant to Seinfeld as well.
Yeah.
Is he even in that movie?
No. I just like making jokes about B-movie. I don't really know why.
It's very charming.
Yeah.
Is that Renee Zellweger? Is that who the love interest was?
Yeah.
Mini Driver, one of those.
I think Putty is in it. Isn't Putty in it?
Yeah.
He's like her boyfriend.
And also in the movie, Ferris Bueller, Matthew Broderick.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Plays his friend, not his own friend, but Jerry Seinfeld's friend, the B's friend, right, who's also a B.
William B. Davis. That's his name as his character in the movie, like his B name, because they have B names for people.
So it's William B. Davis.
Yeah, B-E-E instead of just an abbreviation for
him. Does he smoke and then get tired and lazy and people take his honey?
He smokes like flower stalks.
This is a great show today. We got a great show for you today. If you would like to get involved on today's show, watch a B-movie. Your alternate choice is to go to whatsthedealshow.com, where you can find the show notes for today's episode, and heck, maybe there'll even be a picture there. Something relevant. Anyhow, so, today's episode, The Red Dot, and today's episode, George gets a job through the kindness of Elaine at Pendant Publishing. And as a gift, George buys her a beautiful cashmere sweater. But there's a problem. It has a tiny red dot on the pocket, and George gets his cashmere sweater at a huge discount. But will it backfire? Also, in this week's episode, Kramer drinks. And Jerry, well, maybe he just makes Elaine's new boyfriend fall off or onto the wagon.
So, we've got a monologue, as most episodes start with, and Jerry's on about how it must be kind of scary to sell knives in the mall in a, I wrote it down, in a Hofritz.
Patrick, did you find it hard to hear what he said, like what the store was called?
Yeah, I rewound it like 5 or 6 times because I wanted to write it down and see if it was like, real.
So what's it called again?
Hover.
All right, the
It's a Hofritz. Hofritz.
Is that what is that?
It's like a mall kitchenware store, like Williams Sonoma.
Huh?
So just that kind of thing.
What's Williams Sonoma?
A mall kitchen store.
I kind of thought it would be like House of Knives.
It's more just general kitchen stuff. It didn't seem to be knife specific.
He seemed to be implying that it was all knives.
Well, maybe in the early 90s it was all knives, but their website is kind of all over the place. But yeah, I had never heard of it, and it was so hard to hear it. I thought he was... I couldn't understand what he was saying. But yeah, hot fritz. Do you guys think it's weird for people to go buy knives? I mean, if someone was buying a knife with hooks and gouges and serrated blades that they can really hack away with...
I don't want to besmirch knife store employees, because I'm sure they're all very lovely. But I always get a kind of a sense that they're... I find them more weird than the customers.
Yeah.
Like, the customers come in, they're usually dads or just people looking for a laugh or some kind of novelty gift, but...
Looking for a laugh?
Yeah.
In a knife store?
You know, you look at the big knives.
If they want to stab their friend as a goof.
It's called knifing a bro.
Yeah, but the, you know, knife employees, I'm not so sure about them. I'm sure they're all lovely people, but I don't know.
Well, I go into... like the House of Knives, which we talked about before, like a mall knife store, to buy razor blades once in a while, and they always seem a little too into razor blades and the differences in the quality of steel and sharpness between the different ones and like how durable they are. And they always talk about the one guy, he talked about the glide factor, which is that even a thing? I feel like he made that term up.
Were they shooting a commercial while you were talking to him?
Was this I asked the difference between the two kinds, because one was twice as expensive.
Was one a Mercur blade?
Mm. Yeah, one was a Mercur and one was some other.
Mercur or Mercur?
That's what
you
said.
Really, you really showed us.
What's the German pronunciation?
Mercur.
No, I thought that was the American.
Mercur?
Merkel.
Eine Merkel, Sie bitte.
Anyways, it's the best blade. Let's be honest.
I mean, my thing
What's
at the House of Knives.
Sharp.
At House of Knives, what I don't understand is who's buying the, like, elvish dagger or the, like, broadsword up there? Who's that guy?
Yeah, I was about to get up. The House of Knives always has, like, big novelty swords. And, like, they cost, like, $400.
At least. They must cost more than that.
Yeah, well, I mean, something, at least that. And I don't understand who is buying these. Like, there must be dudes who collect swords. But if you're collecting swords, I feel like you're not going to the mall to get them.
Maybe it's kind of like comic book stores where they have those, like, few, like, valuable copies of some superhero comic and... Obviously, not everyone's buying them, but they got them there in case someone with too much money.
Oh, or maybe it's so, like, people don't feel so bad spending, like, $250 on a chef's knife.
Mm.
They're like, I mean, I'm buying this $250 chef's knife, but I could be buying that $700 broadsword. But, I mean, even people who are really into collecting swords... Who are these people? Like, why do you...
It's a perfectly fine hobby.
If you own a mansion and, like, also, like, a stable full of horses and like going hunting, then I think it's okay to have, like, a rifle or a sword collection.
Or a sword room.
But, if you just have a crappy, you know, like, $800 or $1,000 a month apartment, and you just have them in your living room next to your PlayStation 3... I feel like that's kind of creepy. It's weird.
Well, the Hobbit Feely sword from the new Hobbit movie at B&D Knives and Swords will run you $210.
That's not bad.
That's less than I thought you'd pay for a sword.
Yeah. But what are you doing with that sword? Do you think you probably go to your backyard? You probably go to your backyard and swing it around, right?
You're going on an adventure.
Do you go to LARPing with your sword? Are you allowed a real sword at LARPing?
I don't think so.
Probably have a cardboard sword at LARPing.
Yeah.
Or plastic.
I'm sure they have very strict rules about real weapons on LARPing because people get pretty into it.
Yeah. Yeah, because imagine, like, the news story with a LARPing incident where someone gets their arm chopped off.
It's called LARPing, and it's very dangerous.
Yeah, it's the next sexting. It's the new teen craze.
It's going to be in the new Microsoft Kin ad.
That was a deep cut for that joke into the world of mobile computing.
Yeah, I feel like our one crossover 5x5 listener will appreciate the Microsoft Kin joke.
Yeah.
Hopefully Chris listens to this week's episode. Take us away.
So we start out at the Pendant Publishing Christmas party. George and Jerry just kind of show up unannounced, I guess. And they're in the middle of an argument about whether the Statue of Liberty arrived in New York in one piece. George thinks it came in one piece, and Jerry thinks, I think as most thinking people would, that it came disassembled. What do you guys think?
One piece. In the world's biggest barge, lying on its side.
Yeah, it seems insane that you could think that it would come in one piece.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't want to do any research on it when they talked about it. I always do research while we're recording the show, but I didn't want to look into it too much because I was just trying to imagine, because I kind of felt like their argument was either came in one piece or it came completely disassembled. Like, maybe just, like, the plans and the materials.
Yeah, it just came as raw bronze. Oh, wait, what's it made of? Copper?
I'm not sure.
I think it's copper.
It's copper, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that would explain why it's green.
Yeah, it just came as raw copper, and they had to melt it down and forge it into the shape. It came with a plan. It was, like, a rough sketch of the Statue of Liberty.
Just, like, an idea. Uh-huh. I was thinking it's a lady...
Lady
I don't know.
Liberty?
Justice is blind.
Well... do you want the official research on the Statue of Liberty?
Lay it on us.
The statue was constructed in France, shipped overseas in crates, and assembled on the completed pedestal on what was then called Bedloe's Island. Huh? That's it.
Bedloe's?
Yeah.
How's that spelled?
Bedloe.
Yeah. Hmm.
And they had a ticker tape parade. Dedication.
Oh. It seems like in the... like. Before maybe the 1970s, it seems like there was a ticker tape parade, like, once a week, based on, like, movies and TV shows. Like, there's always a ticker tape parade.
And someone always gets the key to the city.
Yeah, it's like Thanksgiving, ticker tape parade. Like, your team makes it into the playoffs, ticker tape parade.
I mean, I wish I could be a part of a ticker tape parade. It always looks like a lot of fun.
Sale on apples at the grocery store? Ticker tape parade.
Well, that was a big deal back in the day. Apples were an exotic fruit.
You know, I thought
were they exotic? They were grown in Europe and just brought over.
You know, there's only one apple that's indigenous to North America.
The love apple.
I kind of thought they had a giant piece of copper that they carved the Statue of Liberty out of.
Oh.
Oh. That's a 1-800 number phone call, Justin. You know, if you were a professional like Patrick and I, you would have muted your phone before the show.
Mm-hmm. You really believe it. Yeah. So, we also learn that Elaine has a new boyfriend.
He's a drunk.
Yeah. Also, George has a funny poof toque again.
He does. It's the neon green toxic toque. I love it. It's a good look for him.
It's funny. Like, immediately we see that Elaine's boyfriend kind of has a problem with Jerry, because, like, after Elaine introduced him, the guy is like, so this is the guy. Like, she's heard a lot of stories, and I guess the guy is just jealous that Elaine thinks that Jerry is funnier than her, even though he's a professional comedian and he works in a publishing office.
Do you think he's a comedy... No, he's not a comedy writer. He'd be an editor.
He's probably just some clerk or whatever, maybe.
Why does he think he has to be funnier than a professional comedian?
Because he's jealous, right? He's mad of Elaine's, like, male friend, and he feels hetero rage.
Yeah, and do you think maybe Elaine told this friend that Jerry was her ex-boyfriend?
Maybe,
that could contribute to it.
Guys often feel like, you know, probably somewhat ill-advised that women are very attracted to men who are funny, and because all men think they're funny, he's probably just mad that that one of her good friends is a comedian. Maybe he feels like there's some sort of a rivalry going on there.
I think it's kind of like, you know, what, you think you're smarter than me? You think you're better looking than me? It's like one of those, like, you know, male traits that you feel you have to be competitive about, even though it is his profession and it's something completely different.
Yeah. And so Elaine, she also has a, first of all, do you think Elaine is supposed to be drunk in this scene? Because she really gives Jerry a push. And she's like kind of like...
She always gives a push, though.
But she's kind of like loosey-goosey and relaxed. You don't think she's like a little drunk?
I'm not buying it.
I don't think she's drunk.
I think she's fine.
Okay, well,
she seemed under control to me, don't you think?
I don't know.
She seemed
I feel like Jerry's kind of like bewildered by her. Like when she gave him that push, he was kind of like, what's this?
Well, you know, it's Office Elaine, though. We're seeing a different persona of Elaine.
I feel like Office Elaine would be more reserved than with the group.
You'd be wrong.
Do you think this party would be funner than the Stranded party?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
It looks way more fun.
Like, everyone's drinking, it seems like talking, having a good time.
And plus, it's an office party, so anything you're doing at the office that isn't work, especially if it involves alcohol, is going to be more fun. Like, just in comparison to what you normally do there, where it's hours of, like, I don't know, like, reading galleys or whatever they do in a publishing office. Like, if they're just hanging out and drinking, that seems like a lot more fun.
I bet it's a party.
Fun. Yeah, they're having a good time.
Yeah. They're having a read party.
And we also learn...
A party just for reading.
Elaine has a potential job for George.
What a good friend.
Yeah that's really nice.
Really nice.
And you'll be pleased to see that Mr. What's his name?
Lipman.
He's the real Mr. Lipman. No other actor.
The real Lipman.
Uh-huh. Was there another Mr. Lipman?
Yeah, in an earlier episode, they had a different actor, and he was very strange. He, like, almost had no personality. He just seemed very dour.
When was that?
Season earlier?
So that was in the episode where Elaine is worried about office politics and that she's getting squeezed out because she didn't get to order lunch or something like that.
Yeah, it was kind of a half story. They didn't really finish it.
I don't remember.
It wasn't a very good episode.
Yeah.
I think it was called The Stranded.
And so Elaine brings George over to meet her boss. And the boss, he seems like he's in a pretty good mood. Like, he seems like, you know, ready to hire George. And just asks him some basic questions like, what do you read? And George really waffles on this one. I really like his first answer. A lot of good ones.
All the big names. It's funny because, you know, he's not here right now, so I shouldn't pick on Chris Scott. But when we were in high school, we were at the local A&B Sound. Do you guys remember A&B Sound?
Sure, yeah. Big purple building.
Yep. So it was a music store, for those who are listening who don't know. And there was this really cute girl who worked in the back by the jazz blues section. And so Chris, one day, to his credit, with his courage, goes over, talks to this girl, and, you know, he's talking to her, it looks like it's going all right, and she mentions what section she works in, and she's like, do you listen to jazz music at all? And Chris's like, oh yeah, definitely. She's like, well, who do you listen to? And then there was that moment, and this is like, you know, Coltrane. All the big ones.
The, like, one jazz musician he's heard of.
I mean, and to be honest, he did, I mean, it wasn't like either one of us were listening to, like, we weren't beatniks here, but we definitely did listen to some jazz music, but he just, like, blew a total blank on that situation there, and it's just like, Coltrane! The big ones. The big names. Now, when he comes back, if he listens to this episode, I'm sure he'll have a different interpretation of that scene, but I prefer the way I remember how it happened.
And I also like George mentions, like, when he's finally pushed to list one author, he says Art Vandelay, a beatnik obscure writer who wrote a book called Venetian Blinds.
He's from the village.
George is a really bad liar in this whole episode. You know, he's usually, like in the IQ episode where his IQ is being tested, he totally sells his ridiculous lies, which are way worse than in this episode, and yet he just fumbles this entire episode.
Yeah, George tends to have, they're kind of bad lies, but they're just plausible enough that people buy them, and then they fall apart at some point in the episode. Here, it doesn't seem to be working at all. Well, do you think Mr. Lipman buys this? Because he gets the job.
I think Lippman feels a little sorry for him, maybe. I think that might be the case.
I think you just trust Elaine.
And I guess the job is, like, pretty, like, bottom level. Mm-hmm. Like, being a reader is a pretty low-level job in a publishing house, right?
But it's not nothing, either. It's, you know, they're...
No, but I think he's willing to give him a chance. Yeah.
It's an important job, and George will do it to the best of his ability, which is not much, apparently.
Do you think he can actually do the job, though? Because, like, he's not a very intelligent person, at least at this point in the series. And but when you see him later in the office, he seems to be writing notes. So well, maybe he can do it.
I think a reader in a publishing house, they just kind of, they essentially write, like, book reports on manuscripts. Like, just, like, a basic summary to give to an editor who then, like, does more work on it.
There's so not too much brain power.
Yeah, they do, like, sort of, like, the initial once-over.
Right.
And so, like, if you can read and comprehend a book and write, you know, a few pages summarizing and, like, talking about it, I think you can be a reader. I mean, maybe I'm wrong and there's some readers in our audience who will write to us and tell us it's a lot more complicated than that, but that is my impression of that job.
Well, hopefully our readers for the show will summarize their complaints.
Yeah, and so at the end of the scene, we cut back and Dick, who is Elaine's boyfriend, is upset about Jerry being funnier.
And then he walks away.
Yeah, he walks
away. With the wrong drink.
Yeah, Elaine handed Jerry her cranberry and vodka juice. Or wait, her cranberry juice and vodka to look after.
Patrick calls it vodka juice.
Yeah, Dick is just drinking a cranberry juice. And he grabs the wrong drink and he seems to love it. You know, yeah. You see him in the background. He's just sort of pouring it down.
I mean, he's an alcoholic.
He knows what's going on.
Is Jerry really culpable here?
Let's. I think we should save this because this comes up.
Yeah, it comes up.
All right, let's save it.
Yeah, and so Elaine is obviously upset about this, but we cut to the next scene in a department store. Jerry and George are there, and George is trying to find a gift for Elaine to thank her for this nice job he got.
Jerry makes this kind of comment that makes me pretty uncomfortable when he says that he never feels comfortable in a woman's department because he feels like he's just one step away from trying on a dress. I don't know. Maybe it's kind of early 90s humor. It feels a little, I don't know, a little questionable. I don't know. Is it?
We're wearing all dresses right now.
Yeah. No, but it feels a little...
Like homophobic?
I guess. That's what
or
I wrote.
Like,
but
transphobic?
Something like that. You know, maybe... anti-alternative lifestyles? I don't know. It seemed like the idea is that it is a bad thing. It would be so awful that, you know, he wore a dress. I don't know.
Well, it kind of plays off that earlier bit from an earlier episode where... it plays off an earlier bit from an earlier episode where he thinks that, men are just very close to being convinced to go over to homosexuality, like, because they have poor sales resistance.
I'm right on the edge.
Yeah. It's just a little throwaway thing, but... Yeah.
Well, so they're there in this scene, not for Jerry to try on a dress, like you might think, but to try and find a gift for Elaine, to thank her for finding this job for George. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I would have a hard time buying, like, a meaningful clothing gift for someone who is, like, not a romantic partner of mine. For whatever reason, I feel like buying clothes, unless it's, like, a band t-shirt or something like that, is, like, an incredibly personal gift to give somebody. You know, obviously it's not like he's buying Elaine lingerie or anything like that, but especially if it's supposed to be kind of, like, fancy clothes, like a cashmere sweater or a dress or something, it feels too personal for me.
I guess. I feel like because it is a cashmere sweater and it's so, like, ostentatious, it's kind of like you're getting, like, Elaine is getting such an elaborate, like, extravagant gift that it doesn't really matter that it's personal because it's so, like, extravagant.
Penny, get out of here. It's just the cat, everybody. It's fine.
So lonely.
Don't play with Lucy.
Well, we have to remember that Elaine, George and Elaine, they're pretty close friends at this point. So maybe it's not that huge of a chasm to cross with this clothing gift. But I don't know.
Yeah, because it seems like this cashmere sweater is just a gift that anyone would like.
Everyone loves cashmere.
Everyone loves cashmere.
So what's so special about this cashmere? Cashmere.
They check out the price, and it's only $85.
That's a good cashmere price.
Sweater. Yeah, it's an amazing price. But I guess, like, how much does a cashmere sweater typically go for? Like $500.
You know, I actually looked it up before the show, and I can actually read you some prices. So at Ralph Lauren, for a Blue Label, it's called, the most expensive cashmere poncho costs $598 in 2013 dollars. More typically, it's more like $200 or $300 for these sweaters.
Okay. So
maybe has clothing prices come down in like?
I think actually cashmere prices have come down.
Okay.
So has merino wool has also come down substantially.
Yeah, because I think they said something like it was 80% off or something.
It was $600 in the episode.
Yeah. That's a pretty big discount. That's like 80% off. But yeah, Jerry checks it out and he notices a little red dot on the bottom left pocket and says it's damaged. He can't get it.
So my question to you guys is then, would you, as a gift, buy somebody this heavily discounted but slightly damaged sweater? Justin?
You can tell from my hesitation that there's a certain one side of me that is tempted. It seems like so out of character for me to buy clothing gifts, though, that I would not do it. I probably would not make that leap, but I certainly would buy it for myself. Let's put it that way.
How about you, Patrick?
Well, I don't think I would buy it and give it to someone and not tell them about the dot and like just let them think that I was buying it like full price, because that seems kind of dishonest.
Mm.
But I mean, if it was for someone and like I gave them full disclosure and like I don't think they would mind like a tiny little bit of damage, I would get it for them. What about you, Cameron?
I would absolutely buy it.
Yeah, really? You wouldn't tell them?
I would probably tell them.
Probably.
Okay. I feel like I just wouldn't want to buy it and then like attach these sort of like caveats to it of like, oh, this and that. But I would say like, you know, it's got a little dot on it. If you don't want it, that's fine. I can do something else with it. But It's a $600 sweater that's been discounted, you know, massively. What is it, $80 or something?
$85.
Now? $85. And it's a really nice sweater. And you know what? If the person decides that they don't care about that little dot, give it to them. It's a nice gift still.
Now, okay. So what about, let's flip this around. If someone gave you, actually, maybe we should wait until Elaine receives this and we see how she reacts.
Yes, I would take it.
Okay. Before I move on, though, do you think it is a nice looking sweater? Because, like, I'm looking at it, it looks kind of like a grandma sweater.
It definitely looks like a grandma sweater. But, you know, maybe it's so comfortable and such a nice fabric that it's worth it anyway.
It's just so loose-fitting and, like, not really fashionable. But maybe it was fashionable then.
I think probably in the early 90s it was fashionable.
Actually, before we leave the scene, I also want to comment on something. Sorry, Patrick, we keep stepping on you here, but
it's okay.
I love when George is trying to get Jerry's opinion on the sweater, and he's like, come on, give me your overview. And Jerry's overview is, I see a really cheap man trying to buy a discounted sweater.
Oh, trying to get away with something.
Oh, there we go. But it was such a great line.
Yeah.
Man, that must, like, if that was real life, that would be the sweetest line.
Yeah.
That'd be so great. It's almost a shame there wasn't an audience there. Well, I guess there was, but you know what I'm saying.
It's almost a shame it wasn't real life and there was an audience there.
I think the whole point is that it's a fantasy for Jerry. So.
You're off the show. So the next scene, we're in the apartment and Elaine is pretty upset about her boyfriend and thinks he's been drinking. And Jerry asks, like, you know, I think Jerry's feeling kind of responsible and is trying to, like, you know, say that he probably is not drinking and asks if she can smell booze on his breath. And, you know, they have an argument about whether you can smell booze on your breath from one drink.
Which you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Kramer comes in and they get they ask him if he can have a drink, and they can smell him.
Some Hennigans.
And he has a really good line and says, "You can smell me without the drink." Like, it's just something they really want to do and want to get him drunk first.
Now, Patrick, does this scene not remind you of a story you told me once about a teacher talking about gin and tonics?
I don't remember this story. Could you remind me?
You told a story about a teacher who asked if anybody in the class drank gin and tonic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had a class, like, a few years ago in university. I think I was in my fourth year or something like that. And we were reading some English novelist. It might have been Ernest Hemingway or someone of the era. And a character, like, it was an older character who drank gin, and they were talking about, like, we were discussing whether that person stank. I don't remember why. And so the professor, like, asked the class, "Well, does anyone in the class drink gin and tonics?" And, you know, it was late spring, it was warm, and I, you know, actually just had one the night before. And, you know, so I put up my hand, and I said, "Yeah, you know, I drink gin and tonics once in a while." The professor looked at me, pointed at me, like, looked at the class, and he's like, "You know what? You stink." Everyone in the class can smell it. I was like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, gin stinks. You smell like a grandpa." And then the whole class laughed and moved on. And then I was self-conscious for the rest of that class.
Patrick had to pull all the mothballs out of his out of his pockets.
Yeah, so speaking of drinking, they get, Jerry has some scotch that, you know, he has, that was given to him as a gift, and he's been using it as a paint thinner, I guess.
How often does he need paint thinner?
Yeah, and, like,
I think it was a joke that he just doesn't drink it. I don't think he's actually, literally. But why isn't he drinking it? It seems good. So,
or Jerry, I don't think, is into hard liquors.
I guess
I think
not.
He maybe he'll drink a beer once in a while, like when he's watching a baseball game, but
I feel like he would be drinking a soda or something.
No, he drinks beer once in a while. I've seen him drink a beer.
Yeah, you're right. He does.
Yeah, and so Kramer, like, you know, he's excited about the scotch, and he has kind of like a great little routine when he takes a drink of scotch. Like, he slams it back and sort of like out of this mug and sort of does this little thing with his arms. It's pretty great. Yeah, and so they smell him.
No smell. No smell. Tell scotch.
And then Kramer likes it so much that he starts going into a commercial routine, you know, and starts, like, as the rest of the scene is going on, starts talking about the, like, commercial he would do and says things like, "Boy, that Hennigan goes down smooth." The no-tell, or the no-smell, no-tell, scotch. Hennigan's.
It is funny when he talks about different scenarios where it could be useful. It's like, you know, you're feeling a little nervous on your job interview, you just slam a little Hennigan's, and, well, that's just a secret between you and me. It's like he's promoting
alcohol. Because it's odorless.
He's promoting alcoholism or something.
Yeah, and it's funny, Kramer is kind of instantly drunk from that one drink.
He's so drunk.
Yeah.
When George comes in and he's, like, wrangling him, he's like, almost got him, like, in a headlock. "Boy, I love you." Like, he's, like, instantly that uncle that no one wants to be around.
Yeah.
He doesn't drink that much of it either.
He's had, like, one drink of scotch. And, you know, but, you know, actually, George has kind of, like, a pleased look on his face when Kramer is praising him. Like, he looks pretty happy.
Everyone likes to be loved.
Yeah. And, George gives Elaine the gift.
Goes over pretty well for a while there, eh?
Yeah, she's really excited.
See, you know what? If you manage to get somebody a good gift, it's amazing. And right now, in that moment, that's what George is on. And because he's, like, he knows he's weaseling something here, he's just reveling in it. Mm-hmm. He is so pleased with himself. He's got that line he uses throughout the episode, which is, "Of course it's cashmere." Like, he would give somebody, like, no other fabric than cashmere.
Yeah, and
fine Egyptian cottons.
Yeah, and, you know, he's kind of, like, enjoying both that feeling, like, that that gift, good gift glow, and the getting away with it glow.
And also, I feel like he's at such a low point. You know, he's out of job, no job at all. And, you know, Elaine did him a solid and got him the job. And all of a sudden, he's right on top. He, you know, gave her this perfect gift. Suddenly, he's the big man on campus.
Yeah, everything's coming to Milhouse. Yeah, but then Kramer immediately notices the red dot.
Of course Kramer does.
And Jerry, when pushed to say whether he sees the dot, just kind of will not answer.
He's acting so insane. How does Elaine need to take this investigation any further?
Yeah. And then
he's like, what's that?
It's funny, like, he actually takes a drink of scotch to answer and does the same little thing that Kramer does.
Yeah, what
like,
is he doing?
Like, he like sticks the mug out, pulls it back in, and then takes a drink. I don't know what that is.
It looks like he's pulling like a slot machine arm, maybe?
Yeah, or one of the, like, the voting booths, like the big mechanical voting booths.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a cartoon. Yeah. The way everyone acts and overreacts.
I love how he comes back to Elaine after taking the drink like he's got amnesia.
Yeah.
What was that again?
Yeah, and then Kramer, he's asleep on the couch.
Sleeping it off.
Yeah.
Wrapped in that red bow.
Yeah, he goes from, like, a drink to a little tipsy to totally drunk and singing to asleep on the couch within 5 minutes.
He's had a hard day.
Yeah.
So, one more quick thing while we're talking about Hennigan's here. I did a little bit of research on whether or not Hennigan's was a real scotch, because it sounds like a real scotch.
Yeah.
So I just popped it into Google, or, you know, Bing. That's what you're into if you're one of those weirdos. And the top response was a Yahoo answer asking if it was real, to which the top response to it was, "The ocean called, they're running out of you." So, I don't think it's real. I looked around. I went a bit further down. People have made fake t-shirts for Hennigan's. And it has Kramer's advertising on it.
Oh, nice.
But sadly, it does not seem to be a real product that's available for purchase.
Yeah, so the next scene, they're in the office. And Elaine is pretty impressed with George's work ethic. He's kind of staying late. You know, he's really seems to be enjoying his job. You know, he's excited that his job is just reading and writing a book report.
I think if anything, though, that this proves that George had to be immediately fired, because I don't like them in the same place there like that. I don't want Elaine being this nice to George all the time.
Yeah, well, imagine this being, like, another place where there are, like, scenes that move the plot along, like Jerry's apartment and the coffee shop, like, just, like, office humor. Like, if office humor was incorporated.
And
I feel like, though, Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld would not know how to write office humor, but, yeah.
And Elaine's kind of like the Mo to George's Curly in a way. I feel like she's always kind of, like, essentially...
She's putting him down.
Yeah.
You know, poking him in the eyes. Slapping him inside the head. Clunking his head together with Jerry.
That's comedy.
Just like Elaine's father did. Yeah, and so after Elaine leaves, George is working, and the cleaning lady comes by.
There's no chemistry whatsoever, and even with George's awful body story in the next scene, there's no way that this was a very natural-looking conversion. I imagine this was probably the car wreck of sexual encounters on this desk here.
Yeah, yeah, you're right that there's no chemistry. Like, she looks over at him. She does not seem interested at all. She doesn't have any kind of flirty look, but George, he gets a little glint in his eye.
Hennigan's.
Yeah.
He loves a cleaning woman or a chambermaid.
Yeah, so they, in the next scene in the coffee shop, George is telling the story to Jerry. That he slept with the cleaning woman.
Honestly, the expression, "she was mopping the floor with me," sounds so gross. I don't even know what that's supposed to mean, but it's not great.
Yeah, it's weird. And George apparently has always been attracted to cleaning ladies.
What does that say about George that he kind of fetishizes a cleaning woman?
I don't know. What does that mean?
It means he's a disgusting pig.
But you know, it's funny. Jerry just kind of buys it. Like, he's like, oh, okay. You've always been into cleaning women. This makes sense now.
But then he starts to tell the story.
Yeah, it's gross.
It's like, so she starts vacuuming back and forth, her hips swiveling, her breasts. And then Jerry suggests the word convulsing. Does Jerry even know what convulsing means? A full body seizure.
Undulating. Yeah, and you know, I guess they get drunk on Hennigan's and, you know.
But is it like a CD bar scene? Is that what George thinks of it? Because that's what George says. He's like, so then I offered her a drink.
Like, what kind of office is this?
Yeah, I know.
I didn't see any Hennigan's there.
And how?
No, he must have had the bottle that Jerry had.
But how late is quitting time there? How much is George burning the midnight oil? There's nobody left at this office but George and the cleaning lady. Elaine's just leaving.
Well, I mean, maybe, like, Elaine was staying a little late and it's 5:30 or something. Yeah, and you know, there aren't usually, like, around my office, there aren't too many people around after, like, 6 o'clock.
And who knows how long they were drinking and talking, right? They could have been for a couple hours, at least.
But I feel like they couldn't be drinking in the office.
That was my thought. Like, the boss, like, good work today, George. Thanks, Mr. Elliman.
What do you mean they couldn't be drinking in the office?
Well, they wouldn't. Like, I don't think if there were just other people still working,
oh, I see.
They would be drinking.
It would have to be empty.
Yeah. Yeah. And the pièce de résistance, I guess, is that later George threw up from the Hennigan's.
And by the sounds of it, it wasn't that long after.
Yeah, it sounds like immediately after, which is really gross.
Like, it's a good thing the cleaning woman was
there.
Yeah,
so debauched.
George is gross.
Yeah, definitely. This is one of the grossest George things, I think, so far.
This is one of the times where if people could see the recording studio of What's the Deal, aside from the mess of the apartment, if they could see the amount of head shaking, this, like, negative head shaking as we're telling this story, every little bit, like, her hips convulsing, a bunch of descending
head shake.
No one wants this.
Yeah. So back in the apartment, we learn that Dick, Elaine's boyfriend, was fired.
Do you think his name's Richard?
Well, it must be, yeah.
Well, I bet there's people whose name is Dick.
Like, that's their birth name? Like, mm-hmm. On their birth certificate? Oh, maybe. Yeah, I bet. But I feel like most people, it's Richard.
He's a Richard, eh? All right.
Yeah. But Jerry does not feel responsible. And George is in hot water because the cleaning woman is threatening to tell the boss if he doesn't enter, like, a stable relationship with her.
So, Justin, as you alluded to earlier, Elaine's really trying to lay the blame on Dick's firing and Dick's new, Dick's renewed drinking passion on Jerry. I will answer your question there. How can she possibly put the blame on this on Jerry? I don't think this is Jerry's fault.
Why is she so insistent that it's his fault, too? She seems personally invested in blaming him.
I think she wants an out. Maybe she needs an out on this, but there's no way.
Does she feel guilty, maybe?
Oh.
Maybe she feels that she could have done more to prevent it.
Nice one, Freud. Yeah, and you know what? She, like, talks Jerry into a corner. He starts talking, like, he starts making up all these weird excuses. He says he has a deviated septum. Now, has someone had all sorts of bizarre experiences with their nose on the writing staff? Because they keep bringing up, like, the septum on Seinfeld.
I bet that one of the writers just thinks that it's a funny phrase, and they just want to bring it up. It is pretty good.
I don't even know what it is.
I just looked it up. So a nasal septum separates the left and right airways in the nose, dividing the two nostrils. So a deviated septum is that, like, off-center or displaced.
So do you have, like, a funny way of breathing or something?
Yeah.
You have a whistly breathe?
It affects your nose, your breathing.
In my mind, that means that the left nostril goes up into the right passage into the...
No, I think it's more like you have one super nostril and one kind of vestigial nostril.
Or snostril, as people call it. It's a nasty-looking x-ray photo.
Gotta put that in the show notes.
Yeah, I think we will.
Yeah.
Well, so anyhow, Patrick, what do you think? Is this Jerry's fault?
I don't know. I think that Elaine is kind of being a real, like, jerk here. Like, she's really pinning this on Joey. But, I mean, that guy, like, Dick, he has to be responsible, like, for himself, right? Like, there was plenty of alcohol at that party. Like, he could have picked up any drink, you know? Mm-hmm. And he picked it up, and that first taste, he must have known it was alcohol. And well, I feel like
we saw his face. Yeah. He was savoring every liquid gold drop.
I feel like, do you think it was just he thought he had like plausible deniability? Like he thought he was just drinking cranberry juice?
When it comes to addiction, though, I mean, not to get too serious, but once you like, you know, someone who's really has an addictive personality and has been, you know, both physically and mentally addicted to something, you know, that one taste and all of a sudden all your old lifestyle just comes rushing back. And it's not like, it's not like he can just, like, go back now. He's had that sip, and all of a sudden he's back in his old ways. And that's it's just a relapse.
But it's still not Jerry's fault.
No, it's not his fault.
And that whole office must smell like booze.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's a party. So I feel like you have to know your limits and, like, what you can and can't take. And I feel like just holding that drink to your nose, you can probably smell it. So I don't think that Jerry can take the blame here.
It was a tragic coincidence.
Yeah, I mean,
if Jerry offered him a drink, then it could be Jerry's fault.
Yeah, if Jerry goaded him into drinking, you know, then he can take some responsibility. But it was
you're funnier than me. You don't even drink. If you drink this, I'll accept you're funnier than me.
I don't think it's the guy's fault for not resisting it once he's had the drink, but it's certainly not Jerry's fault for not placing the drink in the right spot.
Yeah,
I think that's fair.
So further compounding Elaine being a jerk, George comes back in, and Elaine kind of, like, tricks him into admitting that he knew the sweater had a red dot.
Now, this kind of makes me mad, to be honest. How can Elaine be upset that her friend, who's broke, has been unemployed for ages, went out of his way to honestly buy her a considerate gift?
$85 is not an inconsiderate gift for someone who, you know, for anyone, really.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, any amount of gift is nice, and the fact that he found such a good deal on a slightly damaged sweater. Now, this is the part where he should have just been forthright in the first place, but what sort of nerve does she have to tell off her friend who's absolutely broke?
And essentially to rub it in what he did.
Yeah. And, you know, and George, he's cracking from this pressure. Like, he felt guilty, you know, like, he's under all this pressure to, like, give her a nice gift, and, you know, he thought, you know, he had a deal, and he's making up this story that, you know, he had 103 temperature, and everything in the place had a red dot on it. You know, he's sweating. You know, he's really anxious, and he just wanted to do something nice for Elaine.
But I think it's pretty clear, though, that regardless of his fake temperature or his money troubles, even if George was doing well at the Yankees or something, he still would have done this. I don't think this is necessarily, even though maybe he has plausible reason to be cheap in this way, even cheap is a little harsh, but even if he had the money, I think he would still do the exact same thing because it is in his nature to kind of cheat a little.
I agree, but I think it would be a different situation. That would be the sort of self-righteous George. They should just be happy that I got them a gift at all. You know, that's that sort of George.
Yeah.
This is the George when he's trying to defend what he did and he's still trying to keep up the lie. He has that line where he says, "Here I go out in the season or the spirit of the season and spend all my savings to buy you the most beautiful Christmas sweater, blah, blah, blah." I mean, like, honestly, that rung true to me, though, that, like, mm-hmm. George has almost no money. And I bet even $85 is probably a lot to George.
Yeah.
Now, later on, George, he's still a weasel, and you're right. When he's doing well at the Yankees, I absolutely agree. He'd do the same thing. But it would just be a totally different spirit, you know?
Yeah. I feel like, you know, there was, like, a minor dishonesty in not saying that he knew about the damage on the sweater. But I feel like Elaine is really crossing a line here and being kind of terrible.
She's, you know, it's maybe a little harsh, but she's kind of being a bad friend at this point.
Yeah.
She is. Like, when George is talking at the end there, like, honestly, once again, it rings really true. And he's like, "I couldn't afford anything. I have nothing. I haven't worked for a really long time." And then he starts looking at his clothes, like, "Look at my clothes. Look at what I'm wearing." Like, it felt true to me, honestly. It did. And then there's Jerry back there, fake crying with the handkerchief out. Boo hoo hoo. George hasn't had a job for a year. I mean, like, what's his problem?
Yeah. It's pretty mean. So anyway.
When you put it like that, wow.
Yeah. So anyway, George, he finds something else to do with the sweater. You know, Elaine's given it back. We're at the office. And George regifts the sweater and gives it to his girlfriend. What's her name? Did they say? She's just kind of the cleaning woman as well.
Her name is listed in the script as Lady.
Okay. So he gives the sweater to Lady, and she is really excited. So excited that she calls him Georgie Porgy.
Now, we should mention that the reason why George came to the apartment in the first place earlier, and why he's giving the giving Lady the sweater, is because she's putting the screws on George. Mm-hmm. She's threatening to rat him out for what they did at the office.
Yeah, yeah.
Which doesn't make much sense to me, because I feel like she would also be fired.
Yeah, but she doesn't seem particularly all right in the head. She seems a little crazy.
Well, yeah, so there's this next story we hear. After George gives her this sweater, she's so excited about this cashmere sweater. And we hear this elaborate story about when she was a little girl in Panama, and she saw this rich American. He had this most beautiful sweater that had this fabric she'd never seen before, and she touched it, and she asked the American what it was, and he said, they call it cashmere. And, you know, she's so excited. She asked about, you know, she wanted the sweater from the guy, and, you know, he said, no, get away from me. And so she screamed at him and was holding his leg to grab the cashmere, and she dragged her through the city.
I mean, I feel bad for George in this episode. On top of everything that's happened, what are the odds that this lady would have this crazy experience, and somehow George, in the act of giving her this sweater, reopened this old wound, and this person that was already becoming a major irritant to him, it's only, like, deepened it. It's only made it worse.
You know, actually, I really like this backstory. I feel like this is kind of like a theme that kind of continues in the story, where there's something, some crucial bit of information that a character didn't know that wildly changes the situation from what they thought it was. And in this case, it's this woman's crazy history with cashmere, and, you know, she's so excited to have the sweater. But, you know, she finds the dot immediately as well.
Now, when you guys were kids, did you, you know, not exactly having an experience where you were assaulted by a rich American tourist, but did you guys have, like, a fabric or material that you thought was, like, really great when you were a kid? Because, to be honest, when I first found out about silk when I was a kid, I thought it was amazing.
Because it comes from silkworms?
I just couldn't believe that it, like, felt so different from, like, cotton. Everything I had was just cotton, probably, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
maybe some wool.
I honestly, the first time I felt it, I remember it. Like, I remember feeling this silk and thinking, like, this is the most amazing material I've ever, like, experienced in my life.
I remember being really impressed with wool about how it's, like, has waterproof properties.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's just, like, a knit fabric and looks like it should, like, it shouldn't be waterproof. Like, water should just go through it. I was always really impressed with that. And that it stays warm when it's wet.
You got anything, Justin? Was it?
I don't got anything. No fabric memory.
Mm-hmm. What about cashmere?
What does anyone know what cashmere, like, what is it? What specifically?
Isn't it, like, a wool that's spun from, like, a rabbit fur or something like that?
That sounds expensive.
Yeah, I think it's something like that.
It's from goats.
Oh, goat, like a special goat?
It's a cashmere goat.
Huh. Oh. Is it from that disputed region between Pakistan and India?
I'm not sure. So, cashmere wool is a fiber obtained from cashmere goats and other types of goat. Let's see. Oh, in the United States, under the U.S. Wool Products Labeling Act of 1939, as amended, states that a wool or textile product may not be labeled as containing cashmere unless the wool is produced, the product is fine, undercoat fibers. They even have, like, you need a specific diameter of measurement. Wow. Who would have possibly known that it was, like, so specific? So, apparently the goats are from, what is this region? What is Ladakh? I don't even know where this is. So this is in an area just east of China, or just west of China. Sorry, east of China. It's from the ocean. Ocean goats. So yeah, I guess, you know, kind of disputed regions, classic disputed regions, kind of like near Tibet and those sort of areas, I guess. Anyhow, enough of the Kashmir history lesson.
Yeah, so Lady seems particularly crazy because when she finds this dot, she is upset about it. Like, her whole life, she's wanted to own a piece of Kashmir fabric. She gets it, and this tiny mark ruins it for her. I guess
if... Is she upset, though?
Yeah, she's upset.
I mean, we know that she rats him out, but she... I thought it just showed her, like, what's this dot? And then George throws up his hands, and then cutscene.
I'm pretty sure she's upset. I think she reports him.
Oh, okay.
And so, I guess it kind of makes sense if she's idolized this fabric. Like... a tiny mark on it makes it imperfect, and so it can be all the more upsetting. I think there's actually like a theory like called like marking theory, where like if a person or something is marked, like it becomes like repellent. So like a person with like a scar or something can be repellent. So maybe it's like that same kind of thing.
I think it's called the uncanny valley. Is that what that is?
Yeah, same thing.
The closer you get to the reality, the more likely they are to have a repulsive scar.
So this is very close to being a real Kashmir sweater.
I thought it was funny how George mentioned the whole Clarence Thomas thing. It seemed like a very... you guys know about Clarence Thomas?
I was going to say, do you want to teach us about Clarence Thomas?
So Clarence Thomas is a Supreme Court judge on the current Supreme Court. And he was the second African-American judge ever nominated and confirmed for Supreme Court. But he was a conservative justice, and maybe not necessarily because of that, but there was some controversy over his confirmation because it was assumed, or there was accusation that he sexually harassed one of his clerks, I guess they're called, one of his clerks, and he made a lot of sexual comments to her, innuendo and whatnot, but it was never fully proven, necessarily, and it didn't hurt his, and he ultimately was confirmed, but... Little history there for you guys.
Who's your favorite Supreme Court justice?
I'm
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I love her.
We cut to a monologue, and it's interesting because Jerry's talking about licking the hand blower in the.
Now, who calls it a hand blower in the first place?
What do you call it?
A hand dryer? An air dryer?
Oh, I call it a hand blower.
Yeah, I'd call it that too.
All right, it didn't seem unusual when he said it.
I'm just going to quickly hop into the bathroom and get a quick hand blower.
Ooh. Wait, would you... it's funny. Like, the scene is set up like it's a regular monologue, but they do something... that they haven't done before in any episode of Seinfeld. Like, the monologue is just in the narrative of the story. Like, as Jerry's telling this joke, Dick, Elaine's, I guess now ex-boyfriend, is heckling Jerry.
Is this the only time, Cameron, where this has ever happened?
I believe this is the only time where the monologue is part of the episode in this way. There's episodes where they're at the comedy club, and you see Jerry doing his routine, and it's part of the episode.
Yeah.
But there's never one where they jump into it kind of in medias res again, I guess, where it's just like in the middle of his routine, and all of a sudden it's part of the narrative. This is pretty self-contained, this one episode.
Yeah, it's quite shocking. Like, I forgot that this happened in the episode, and I was really, like, taken aback when it happened. I thought it was really effective.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I mean, I wouldn't want it, like, recurring or anything, but for this one episode, it packed a punch. Yeah.
See, for me, I don't know that I really like it that much. What I don't like about it is that the monologue feels so self-contained, and it's actually, in my mind, the best acting that Jerry does in the early seasons of the show, because it's what he really does, right?
Yeah.
He's actually a stand-up comedian, and all of a sudden, when he stops being stand-up Jerry and starts being Jerry the actor, and he's like, oh, wait a second, we've got a heckler, ladies and gentlemen. It made his acting stand out in a way that I thought was undesirable, at least for a few seconds.
I mean, I've never been as critical of Jerry Seinfeld's acting as you guys have been. I've never found it particularly stand out in the episode. I mean, I know that's a...
Open your eyes.
I know that's a minority, but, like, you know, I've watched all those early episodes, too, but, like, he doesn't stand out, in my opinion, as being particularly a terrible actor in those early episodes, but that's just me. I'll put it that way.
You're off the show.
I kind of think Jerry gets away with some of his acting because sometimes he acts kind of cartoonish.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's his role. But I feel like Jerry is just unable to articulate emotion while acting. And so, like, he has to do those really cartoonish things. Like, you know how he has that move where when he thinks someone's done something outrageous, he does that really elaborate eye roll and, like, his whole face kind of, like, moves all over the place.
He really mugs
And, you know, he has, like, the, like, high, like, stressed voice, which is not, like, a stressed person in real life would ever talk.
Hmm.
Like, it's always cartoonish.
Jerry's handling of the heckler, it was pretty amazing, actually. Like, he didn't miss a beat. He was so on it.
It's almost like it was scripted.
Almost, yeah. Like, I mean, again, it's like Jerry's fantasy of how to handle a heckler, but
yeah.
I almost got the sense that, you know, like, compared to, say, someone like Louis C.K., who sees it as, like, a personal affront to his art form, he sees it as an insult, essentially. Jerry almost, like, he, like, rolled with the punches and, like, delivered a zinger just to get that heckler. Like, it almost seemed like it was a part of the show.
Now, when I saw Jerry Seinfeld in person, there was actually a guy in the audience who wasn't heckling him, but it was one of those kind of, like, well-meaning but ultimately stupid fans who just kind of, like, shout something out during the routine. Like, the guy's like
requests?
Yeah, and it's like, that's a great idea. I'll roll with that. You did a better job than I did for planning for this show. And some guy shouted out, say... Newman from the audience, and Jerry Seinfeld just said, I'm not your monkey.
That's funny.
Which was, you know, it worked, but it's not particularly clever. I actually kind of thought the problem with Jerry's handling of the situation is that it wasn't just a heckler. He knew this guy and he knows he's a drunk, which made it seem slightly insensitive to me when he's like, the hell do you know about wagons? Like, I know enough not to get on them.
Yeah.
Like, I know better than to become a drunk. You really zinged Dick.
It was a bit, yeah. Alcoholism is very serious. It is.
So, back in the office, George is in Mr. Lipman?
Lipman.
Mr. Lipman's office.
Two P's.
And Mr. Lipman confronts George pretty directly about the rumor that George has had sex on his desk.
He refers to it as an office, which I think is kind of funny, because, like, that is definitely not an office. That is barely even a cubicle. Yeah. It was, like, two walls of a cubicle he seemed to have.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they're narrow walls. Like, it doesn't even hide George. It hides his head. That's about it.
Yeah, and George has a really hilarious reaction. Like, he thinks he's getting out of this, and he plays dumb. He's like, oh, was that wrong?
Well, what's great about it, though, is he thinks about it for a second. Like, how am I going to approach it? Can I really, like, just deny it again? But he just, you know, he almost goes, like, full, like, good liar George, except it doesn't come across as believable.
But even if Mr. Lipman bought that George didn't think that was wrong, is that an employee you really want to have who doesn't understand that that's wrong? What else will he not think is wrong?
I do really like that George thinks that pleading ignorance on this subject is, like, an acceptable solution. Should I not have murdered a person? Is that a thing I can't do legally here?
That was wrong?
If someone had told me I couldn't do
this. He was really annoying.
I also really like that, as I mentioned before, that the cleaning lady rats him out. Does she lose her job here? Was she so crazy that she was willing to also lose her job? Not that she had a particularly glamorous job.
It doesn't seem like she's lost her job.
So why is George fired and she isn't?
I don't know. I mean, maybe she was. It's hard
but
to
maybe
say.
She's hired by the building or something, you know, and they can't fire her. I don't
or
know.
Maybe she, he took advantage of her or something in a way, like pushed her, like, or like, you know.
Or, yeah, well, he did get her drunk. And then, you know, mop the floor with her. You know, and, you know, maybe Mr. Lippman just doesn't really care, right? Like, yeah, he doesn't care that the cleaning woman had sex in the office, but he cares that...
he doesn't seem to like George, you know?
No, he's giving her a chance as a favor to Elaine, or he's giving him a chance as a favor to Elaine, but...
And what I like is that, once again, George is just being totally messed with in this scene. Mm-hmm. I like how, as George walks out in shame, being fired, you know, what is this, 2 days into his job or something, and then Lippman calls him back and throws the cashmere sweater in his face. Like, literally, it hits George in the face and stays there.
Yeah.
Why couldn't he just hand it to him? Why'd he have to throw it in his face? And take this on the way out.
Maybe, like, a pie could have thrown in his face as well. Like a wedgie.
And then Mo comes around with the seltzer bottle.
Yeah, so George is fired. Then, like, later in the office, I guess... we see... Jerry come to pick up George from his last day, and Elaine kind of confronts George about this whole situation. She's a little disappointed with him, to say the least. And they have an argument about whether kissing is sex, whether she's had sex in the office.
I don't know in what world he actually believes this. He's just trying to you know, get one up, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he's at such a low point, but...
You're no better than me, or you know... Yeah, yeah, you're no better than me.
I think we can all agree that kissing is not sex.
Mm-mm.
Well, I think all of us except for Jerry, because Jerry seems to think that it's kissing plus a nipple.
Yeah.
And then Dick shows up, and Dick, he's drunk. He is so drunk, and he's just dragging a Christmas tree around the office. And Elaine panics. She's so scared, and she says that it's Cape Fear. Yeah. Have you guys ever seen that movie?
No, never.
It is nothing like Cape Fear. So I'll just go ahead and read to you the Wikipedia summary here for Cape Fear, and you tell me if this reminds you of this situation at all. So, the film tells the story of a convicted rapist who, using his mostly newfound knowledge of the law and its numerous loopholes, seeks vengeance against a former public defender who he blames for his 14-year imprisonment due to purposefully faulty defense tactics used during his trial. This is not Cape Fear.
Is there, maybe there's a scene where the rapist, you know, approaches...
Goes on a rampage or something?
But, I mean... That's so many movies if it's just a rampage.
I guess so.
It's like The Warriors. Like,
how did you guys feel about, like, the tone of this scene? Because it's, like, on one side, it's playing it for laughs. Like, oh, this drunk guy, this alcoholic, is coming with this Christmas tree. On the other hand, it's kind of, like, horrifying because this guy could be, like, really dangerous. And, like, I don't know. It's a weird mixture of tones, this last final bit.
Yeah, it's really weird, like... They seem genuinely terrified.
Right.
But it's like, also a comedy scene, and there's, like, the audience laughing. It's very strange. And, you know, the final thing where, you know, they're under the desk, Dick is just kind of standing there with his Christmas tree, breathing heavily, and George, with a shaking hand, offers up the cashmere sweater.
Of course it's cashmere.
George is terrified, and then there's, like, a final joke where he says, is this cashmere?
Of course it's cashmere.
And then, it's what's weird. This?
Yeah.
He notices the red dot, of course.
Yeah, it's a weird mix of tone. Yeah.
I don't think it ruins anything, but it was interesting.
Yeah.
It was different.
So, yeah, and then there's another weird, you know... monologue that crosses into the main narrative where Jerry's talking about, you know, how he turned a guy into an alcoholic and feels responsible. And, you know, it's uncomfortable because they're always saying they love or hate you. But then we just see Dick with a woman, you know, he's like all cleaned up with a nice looking woman, and they both kind of make a few jokes at each other. And we see that everything turned out okay.
He cleaned up.
It's really weird.
You clean up nice, Dick.
We made a bunch of jokes at the expense of an alcoholic, but it's all right. He cleaned up.
Well, that's that.
Yeah, I couldn't really get behind this last scene. It's a weird tone. It's a little uncomfortable. And just kind of all in all, it's not really a monologue to be like, I guess I accidentally made this guy an alcoholic. Like,
yeah. I think the episode would have been better if they had just ended at the scene with like Dick taking the sweater.
Just kind of left it there, eh?
Yeah, left that final joke.
Yeah, I could see that.
But maybe that was the actual end of the show and like someone at the network or something complained.
It just felt it was a little too dark.
Yeah.
We've destroyed this person's life.
So what do you guys think of this episode?
I guess I'll start. Other than like the questionable entrance of Dick at the end and the final monologue, pretty funny episode overall. I thought it was pretty good. All the twists and turns, I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I agree. Pretty funny. Some of the stuff with Dick, and obviously alcoholism is a pretty tough thing to... for whatever reason, it's probably the most socially acceptable thing to kind of, like, have a laugh at, probably, and, like, comedy. But it is a pretty serious thing, especially when you see, like, he came back to his office drunk and trashed it. But, you know, kind of buying into the convention of it, pretty funny episode. Jason Alexander was really good, I thought, in this episode.
Yeah, I think overall it was pretty good. Like, I laughed a lot when I watched this episode, but there were definitely some rough edges. But overall, good.
Nice. All right, so I guess that leaves us with other business, the part of the show where we look at the weird, the bizarre, and the esoteric. Today's other business topic can be viewed at whatsthedealshow.com. Please go there and check it out, and you can read along today with today's very, very strange bit of information. Here's the breaking news. Baby ultrasound looked like evil Star Wars Lord. A U.S. couple's ultrasound showed their baby looked a lot like evil Star Wars Emperor Palpatine. According to a report in London's Daily Mail, Heather Large spotted Luke Skywalker's power-hungry nemesis during her 20-week scan. The 39-year-old mom-to-be was having her ultrasound with husband Toby, 33, in Illinois, when they caught sight of, quote, the shadowy Dark Lord. Fortunately, when baby Bowie was born, he looked nothing like the Overlord, the Daily Mail reports. Hopefully you've all had a chance to look at this picture, because, honestly, it's amazing.
I'm trying to figure out where the, like... I'm trying to see where are the features here. Like, where's the... Is that the mouth?
So this is... and there's his evil cloak.
That's his cloak, okay.
Well, his mouth... that's the mouth.
That's the mouth?
It's the mouth.
Oh, right. So you just see his mouth and nose, but no eyes.
Yeah, it's in shadows.
Why do they think that's automatically the emperor of...
Well, are you looking think at the picture? Does?
I'm seeing it, but there are a lot of shadowy, cloaky figures in the world.
Yeah, but they're not always babies.
So what shadowy, cloaky figure do you think it looks like?
It could be a... what are those things?
He shall not be named?
Voldemort. Or maybe in...
Don't say it.
Oh. Or the guards of Azkaban. I don't remember what they're called, but...
How about the Nazgul?
So the problem is... that they're too specific with which shadowy cloaked figure.
I think there are a lot of shadowy cloaked figures this baby could be.
If Justin wrote the article, he'd be like, shadowy lord found, but which one?
So you think they're overreaching their journalistic license here and making interpolations they shouldn't be.
Well, didn't the couple say that they thought it looked like the emperor?
They did.
So you think the journalist should have questioned them?
Yeah.
Don't you think this could be Voldemort?
You know, the
one of the Azkaban guards?
Dementors is what they were called.
Ra's al Ghul.
What?
He doesn't have a shadowy hood.
Sometimes.
No, never.
Okay, well, whatever.
You just always see his face.
Okay. Batman.
Batman? Yeah, it could have been Batman. Who else could it be? How come no one's going with the Nazgul? Nazgul is fun to say.
What's Nazgul?
They're the corrupted former kings of men from the Lord of the Rings.
Oh.
The Death Knights, I think. I'm sure somewhere right now...
I think they're called, like, Black Knights or something.
I don't know. I'm seeing Lord Palpatine pretty quickly here. I believe it's him.
I'm just going to go ahead and search for Nazgul. No, see, look at it. It's just a dark, shadowy figure.
Are those the people that can see...
They're ring wraiths.
Ring wraiths, right? They can see Frodo when he wears the ring. Is that the idea?
Yeah. Something like that.
I kind of remember that movie.
So, they were once mortal men. Oh, yeah, okay. See, look, I had this right. So, if there's some sort of angry star... Or... Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Some sort of Jedi mind melt. So, I want to ask you guys. Let's say, you know, happy day. You've impregnated a lady.
We're not sterile.
Okay.
Our boys can swim.
Did you just say her boys?
Our boys.
Oh, your boys. Right. Them too. Anyhow, you're at the ultrasound and you see this, or you see something like that. Would that make you nervous at all? Because for some reason, I feel like if I saw this, I would feel slightly nervous.
Like you were about to give birth to...
It's like Damien.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like it'd be kind of cool to have, like, Damien as a kid. I mean, I know it's...
Did you see that movie?
Well, I mean, like, hypothetically, I guess. Without the, maybe without the murder.
This is the worst time without the murder. Maybe if he was just a normal baby boy.
Maybe, like, the potential or, like, the evil power, maybe, but without the actual doing it.
You're like Kramer. Do you remember that scene? Do you know what I'm talking about? Where they're talking about Damien.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
he was a troubled youth.
Yeah, he's just nothing. He was just a regular, mischievous boy.
Yeah.
I guess that would be no good.
Really?
But I think it would be kind of cool if he looked like Damien. I'll put it that way.
So if he looked like a normal baby boy.
Well, but with sinister overtones.
Why would you want that?
It'd be kind of fun. Kind of an edge to it.
So you don't want your baby to be like a real boring lame duck?
I don't
want
him to look like a cherub or like a, you know, like a little,
Can you just put a little eyeshadow on him or something? Wouldn't that be enough edge?
I'm pretty disappointed by the first Google image search result for the name Damien.
That's a little questionable.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I don't know. If this was the first picture I saw of my baby, maybe I would feel a little nervous. You know, not, like, real nervousness, just at the back of my head, like, what if I'm giving birth to a Sith Lord?
But, I mean,
what
I'll
say
this.
What if he kills all the Jedi? All
right, well, let me put it to you this way. Patrick, you can go first, because we already know what Justin's answer is. Would you rather have your child be the Sith Lord who ends all the Jedis, or Damien?
Probably the Sith Lord. Because I feel like I could, like, if it were the devil incarnate, I feel like no matter what parenting I do, I could not fix that. But, you know, the Sith Lord, I feel like I have a fighting chance, you know? Like, Anakin Skywalker, he just turned to the dark side because of, like, bad circumstances, you know? I feel like I could maybe, you know...
I don't know if it's completely bad circumstances.
Well, I mean, partially.
I think he allowed himself to be filled with rage and hatred.
Maybe, but he didn't have a good childhood, you know? He grew up in that junkyard.
What? He lived with Watto!
He...
Give me your credits.
You know, I guess he got to pod race and build C-3PO, but, you know, he lived in a junkyard.
He didn't seem unhappy. I mean, did you see where Luke grew up?
He did grow up on a moisture farm.
But he was free, though. He could go to...
Tashi Station?
Yeah, and, you know...
Tashi Station?
Pick up some power converters.
Power converters!
That's what I said.
Waste time with his friends?
No.
What?
Maybe next season.
That was really good.
I don't
know.
What about you, Cameron? What do you think? Damien or Sith Lord?
Come on. That's easy. Sith Lord.
Damien.
The devil's son?
Who's more powerful, a Sith Lord or Damien?
But it's not about the power. I just feel like...
Do you want your child to just have a lot of evil power?
Connections, Patrick.
To who?
I mean, doesn't he kill his parents?
I remember.
At least one of them.
I feel like
I bet you're just hoping to meet Kim Jong-un. You know?
I like how Justin's like, I just fell asleep in the movie. That's why he wants to have this baby, because the baby was born, it was just normal. And he's like, oh, this is a nice movie.
Didn't you hear the music every time they showed him do something a little sinister? It's scary.
Yeah, I guess. I actually only saw the remake of The Omen. I didn't actually watch the...
With Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen?
They're not in that, are they?
It was a joke.
Hey, Olsen twins. So what? You're sticking with Damien.
I'm sticking with Damien. Damien's cool.
Feels like Seth a mistake.
Yeah. Sith Lord, come on. Force choke. I don't want that.
So you'd rather have the devil?
I mean, he can force choke.
A force
choke
of
you.
Pure evil with no redemption.
Maybe. Yeah.
Pure evil or.
Well, you know,
some misdirected evil.
But evil, you know, it's just. Evil just means being away from the God in heaven. So maybe it's just. Misplaced anger, you know. Maybe I could turn Damien to being a non.
Did you see that movie?
It's been a while.
That kid had every advantage.
Yeah. You know, they made 3 Omen movies, and I actually I looked into this the other day for whatever reason, and I was shocked by the actor who's in the Omen 3, and I can't remember who it is now. I'm gonna quickly look it up, because like in my mind, those movies are just so bad.
So bad? They're pretty good.
Oh, yeah. It was Sam Neill.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's Damien?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did you not see the last one's really bad.
Actually, I've only seen the first Omen.
The first one's good, the second one's okay, and the third one's really bad.
He's the president?
No, he's the CEO.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I just saw a President of the United States banner.
Isn't his company called, like, Evil Inc. or something?
I don't remember.
Some kind of, like, real, like, heavy-handed name.
He gets appointed to be ambassador to Great Britain. I mean, I think maybe he eventually somehow finagles that into becoming, like, the president or something. But, I think he actually fights Jesus in the last movie.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No.
I'm looking at the plot synopsis.
That's pretty great, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. Damien calls out for Christ to appear before him. As he does, so Jesus appears before him. Oh, well, maybe we shouldn't spoil it, but, it's all gonna work out.
This 20-year-old movie?
Hey, there's still time.
There's no statute of limitations on spoilers, in my opinion.
It made $20 million. Or, wait, it made $15 million.
But in, like, 1953.
That's... In 1981. The first Damien, the first Omen movie was a silent movie. Came out right after Nosferatu.
Actually, the first one, wasn't that directed by Buster Keaton? yeah. So, Sith Lord, baby. I don't know.
I think we've officially reached the end of what we can talk about with this baby. But I'll tell you this.
Yeah, check out, if you haven't looked at this picture, if you're, you know, listening on a train or something and you don't have the internet right now, when you do, be sure to look. This ultrasound is uncanny. It's amazing.
So next week we will be looking at the subway, in which Jerry, Elaine, Kramer, and George are all taking the sub. The sub? They're all in a submarine. Are all taking the subway to different locations for various events, and it kind of spells out the adventure of their day. I'm trying to remember that Elaine is going to what is heavily specified as a lesbian wedding. George is going to a job interview. Jerry is trying to go to Coney Island, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, Coney Island.
And I don't know what Kramer's doing.
This episode was later remade into a movie, right? Like The Hunt for Red October?
I think it was called Speed. Anyhow, it's an interesting episode, and it's the beginning of a long series of George being called Biff from Death of a Salesman, so stay tuned for that. And yeah, so if you enjoyed today's episode, which I know you did, please visit whatsthedealshow.com and you can check out all the show notes, the little picture that someone may or may not draw. And heck, you can even go in there and check out all the back episodes. Maybe this episode has left you hungry nay thirsty for more What's the Deal? Well, you can quench your thirst in the desert of Seinfeld there at whatsthedealshow.com. But wait, that's not all, because we're tapped in. We've got the connections. We are now on LinkedIn.
No, we're not. We'll never stop getting emails from them.
Well, where are we available to social network with?
So, we're on a few of them. We're on Twitter. You can follow us on Twitter, at WTD Show. We tweet all the episodes there, so if you want to keep up, you can follow us there. You can star those tweets or something. We're also on Facebook, where you go to facebook.com/whatsthedealshow. You can also... what are you doing? You like on Facebook. You can like us and then get all the episodes in your wall? Stream. Your stream?
Your timeline. Is it a stream?
Which one is it?
Time wall.
Time wall. Time cube. And you can like things or whatever you want. Or we're on Tumblr, too. You can follow us on Tumblr.
You're on Tumblr?
Yeah.
Wow.
Whatsthedealshow.com? That's a Tumblr.
Huh, it's a Tumble blog. It's a
Tumblr.
I don't know how Tumblr works.
It's like Twitter, but longer, and blog.
Huh.
A Tumble blog. It was the original microblogging service.
Mm. It's not microblogging.
They refer to it as microblogging.
Oh. I thought it was Tumblogging.
Well, Tumblogging is a form of microblogging.
And you know what? If you have the Stitcher Smart Radio app, you can listen to us there.
You can?
Yeah. Some people listen to us on Stitcher Smart Radio. For, like, the last few episodes. I don't know who these people are, but keep it up.
You know what they are? They're smart, handsome people.
I don't even know what Stitcher Smart Radio is. I don't have that app. But we're on there, and people are downloading it, so keep it up.
Tumblr is a microblogging platform and social networking website.
David Karp.
Marco Arment.
Yeah, so any of those things, social network with us, please. Or don't.
What an impassioned request. Well, Justin, what do you have to say to our listeners?
Well, if you have iTunes, if you actually use that thing, I don't use it, but if you like the iTunes, you should head over to iTunes and check out What's the Deal shows on there. And if you prefer to have Damien as your devil child, I suggest you rate 5 stars for What's the Deal show. And if you prefer Sith Lord, just don't vote, because let's be honest, it's Damien all the way. but seriously, you know, rate the show. It's worth supporting.
Are we on Google Play?
Are we on the Google Play Store, Justin?
You're not on the Google Play Store.
How do you get on there?
There's no blogs on
the Put us on there.
There's no blogs on the
we're
Play Store.
We're not a blog, we're a podcast.
That we're all about crapple on this show.
There's no podcast, but you're not really listed. Like, if you search for What's the Deal, for example, on, like, what's the podcast app I have? Searchcast?
Pocket Cast.
You have to actually, like, add it manually if you ever use that app.
How do we get in there?
I don't know. I looked, but it didn't seem to explain.
So, Android users, we don't know how you're listening to our show.
You need to have, an Android slant to this podcast. That might help.
Yeah. Samsung Galaxy S4.
I'm very excited for Key Lime Pie.
S Health.
Now, while you ladies are cooling down, tell us about S-Health.
S-Wave? What are the other ones?
Samsung Wallet.
Samsung Galaxy.
Is this a Nexus 4 you got here, Justin?
It is.
Oh.
I don't care.
Hey.
All right.
All right, well, thanks again for listening. Keep listening. We love it that you're listening. Keep letting our golden pipes fill your ears. So, a hearty thank you here from your favorite guest host and mine, Justin Armstrong.
Goodbye.
Your old reliable pal, Patrick Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And myself, Cameron Wong. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week. And that's a show, and it's not even too long.
It's pretty good.
How mad do you think people are going to be that we talked about Samsung Galaxy S4?
I'm sure it's a lovely phone and everyone should buy it.
Is that really what it's called? Samsung Galaxy S4?
That's yeah.
It's a long name.
Well, I mean, it's like Apple iPhone 5S. I mean, that's just as long.
But
It's another word.
But you don't put Apple in there.
But you don't have to say Samsung. You can just say Galaxy S4.
But no one says Galaxy S4. They don't say the Samsung.
I don't think so. I think people say Galaxy S4.
They don't.
Well,
in Japan, they say
Galaxy S4. Because they call it an SGS4. That is the abbreviated name.
Who calls it that?
Samsung.
S-Health.